Welcome to episode 5 of Stories of Recovery podcast. This episode is called Recovery Education. The podcast is a collaboration between Mental Health Ireland and the HSE Cavan Monaghan Mental Health Services as part of the Connecting for Life strategy to reduce suicide in our communities. My name is Miffy Hoad. I'm a Development Officer with Mental Health Ireland in the Cavan Monaghan area, and I host the conversations here on the Stories of Recovery podcast. It's widely recognised that the sharing of personal narrative and lived experience of surviving and recovering from adverse events in our lives offers hope and inspiration to those who may be going through something similar. It's been shown to promote help-seeking behaviour and encourage people to reach out for support when needed. It's our intention that the conversations we have in this series of podcasts will bring hope and inspiration to you, the listener, and encourage you to reach out should you need support. We also hope that the conversations here add meaning to the experience of those involved in helping to spread the word that recovery is real and possible, even from the most difficult of experiences. A list of supports and services can be found in a link below the podcast and will also be announced at the end of this recording. Thanks for listening, and let me introduce you to our theme and guests today. In this episode, I'm talking to Lorraine, Joanna and Eunice, who are peer educators with Innovation Recovery College, based in Cavan but serving the border counties. They share their stories and how they found their way into recovery education. Kevin Curran is the coordinator of the project, and he also joins us and talks about the project itself. I hope you find the conversation useful. We met in the office of the Innovation Recovery College in Cavan. There's a little bit of background noise of traffic passing on the road, but I hope it doesn't distract from the interesting conversation. We'll take it from here. Really grateful that you've all agreed to be part of this podcast, because the Stories of Recovery podcast is a great way of getting people to hear other people's stories. And with that, we can inspire hope in listeners in hearing that recovery is real, it's possible, it, you know, despite the adversity and sometimes because of the adversity. Lorraine, can you talk to me about your journey into recovery education?
Well, I suppose I've always had mental health challenges ever since I was a teenager. And over the years, I would have like very dark times and things like that. And I also had no self-esteem whatsoever. I didn't even know what it was. Okay. So I had no self-worth and felt like I was no value. But I'd got through all those years, you know, I'd go to the doctors and get a prescription and so on. But it wasn't until I had like a major episode about 10 years ago. It was completely life-changing in a way that I got so depressed and my anxiety was so bad that I literally became a prisoner in my bedroom. I was having panic attacks when I drove, so I completely stopped driving. And then I retreated to the bedroom. So anyway, to cut a long story short, my doctor referred me to the primary health services in Virginia, and I met with the psychiatrist and the crisis team. And then over that period, then I was offered to go on different group therapy sessions, which was the cognitive behaviour therapy, which is a way of training your mind from now, doesn't like whatever happened in the past, leaving the past, but like focusing in on now and how can we improve. So I went on a general anxiety disorder course, which really helped. And then I think the turning point for me really was the self-esteem course. Okay. Because I really didn't understand what self-esteem was.
Yeah. Well, you're talking about the cognitive behavioural therapy and the general anxiety disorder and the self-esteem. These were courses, right? So these were recovery education.
It was
programs.
Yeah, but it was for the service users.
Yes, okay.
So it was like in-house group therapy.
Yes.
And it was such an eye-opener and a relief to, first of all, that I'm not the only one, because I was with a group of people with similar situations.
Yeah.
And even understanding different terms and stuff like self-esteem, I thought was just such a minor part of a being. But it's huge, and the impact that it had. Throughout that course, we learned what self-esteem is, We learnt different tips and tools on how to cope, and we would do experiments. Mm-hmm. And I mean by experiments, you know, we would try and push our boundaries that little bit more. Okay. In order to get out of our comfort zone. Mm-hmm. And realise that the world isn't as bad as what I had imagined in my head.
Okay.
You know, yeah. So it really was a massive turning point for me. So after that, and like feeling so much better about myself and valuing myself as a person, I wanted to give back because this was so life-changing, and I was just so overwhelmed with all the support and everything that I'd got. I really wanted to give back. So an opportunity came up where I could train to be a RAP facilitator, which is the Wellness Recovery Action Plan. And again, I hadn't known about RAP beforehand. Until I went on this program, and I thought, this program will help me identify when I'm starting to feel down. You know, I can work out what I can do at the different times and so on. Mm. And that education to me was another wow moment. Okay. It was amazing. So I became a RAP facilitator. Mm. And I'd done numerous courses with a social worker, and like a professional. So the professional would be there, and I would be there to give my experience. And it's like a journey of discovery.
Yes.
It was also great because not only, you know, was I giving my experience and stuff, I was there listening to other people saying, well, this worked for me as well, and things that I had never thought of. So it was almost like a real good two-way relationship. And it was great to see people at the start of the course and see how they grew.
Yes.
Through the 8-week period.
Mm.
And how much RAP had opened their eyes as well.
Yeah.
You know? So from then on, I mean, I'd always kind of worked in the financial services industry for years, but when I saw the power of education and courses, how they can help people who were in similar situations to myself, I just wanted to go there and say, look, this has worked for me, it could work for you, and this is life-changing,
yeah.
You know, and that's what I wanted to really get out there. And I became so passionate, and I still am so passionate about it.
You'd never know by listening to you. Fabulous, Lorraine. There's a big remove between financial services and recovery.
Huge.
Education, isn't there? So you're obviously bringing,
yeah,
a lot to that. Can I come to you, ladies, and ask about your journey and how recovery education has supported you on your journey? Yeah, Joanna, do you want to share?
Sure. So my journey started off when I was a teenager. I was 16 years old and I had my first breakdown and I had to be hospitalised. I was very young at the time. I was put into an adult psychiatric unit, and that was the onset, that was the start of it. And then I went on to college after school. I studied psychology and various other courses along the way. More recently then, I did mental health in the community course, which was very insightful. There were other courses since then. We did crisis peer support, crisis and healing for trauma. It's another course we did. We recently did a course on train the trainer. So with all these courses combined, I suppose, they've supported me and supported us in our recovery journey. And it's a journey, recovery is an ongoing thing. Mm-hmm. With the courses we deliver ourselves, we practice what we preach. For example, we do a course on building a healthy self-esteem, and we use the techniques and the tips that we advise other people to do, or the tips we suggest, we use them ourselves in our own daily lives. And that's, I suppose, the main point about it, that it's ongoing, and it's so important to have education about mental health. When we experience mental health difficulties ourselves, it's important to know what we're dealing with. So I would say that all these courses were extremely beneficial to me and my recovery.
And what I'm hearing in there, Joanna, is that it's like this win-win situation. You're learning about recovery by doing these courses yourselves. You know, you're applying what you're learning to yourself, and then you're also supporting other people who are on their own recovery journey and sharing all that information as well. And so there's a lovely kind of relationship between the peer educators and those coming for peer education, that there's this to and fro exchange.
Absolutely. And the peer support is a big part of that as well, that we're helping each other. We're helping each other as facilitators, as peer educators, and we're also helping the clients that attend our courses.
And Eunice, what is recovery for you?
I suppose for me, recovery, I suppose it means different things to different people, doesn't it? I think for me, I had a lot of trauma family-wise that happened, and which resulted for me in bad depression and anxiety back a good while ago now. But I think the biggest thing for me was the peer support group that was available at the time in St. Davenant, and still is ongoing too as well there, and occupational therapists too, that every week in the peer support would put on a programme, like say, what is depression, what is anxiety, and through that then we learned about what depression was, what anxiety was, because I remember I used to go up and the doctor asked me, how's your anxiety today? And I myself didn't even know the difference between depression and anxiety, because I had never, this was my first time, you know, experiencing this. I think that the education part of it was a big thing in learning actually about the illness and what was happening to me, and then attending the peer support group, seeing that I wasn't just on my own, there was other people there suffering the same. So we're all, each and every one of us, were all able to share and support each other. So I think then from that led me on then to those different things come on, looking for service users to give maybe a talk in a community, or else service users representing on meetings, and so I think I did a lot of things like that for a good number of years, 5-6 years of that. And then the opportunity, there was an organisation in the HSC as well where I went on training, and I was trained as a facilitator, and I developed an 8-week course for them. And then the job then was advertised for peer educator, so I thought I would give it a go, and so got the job, and so that has landed us here.
And you know, when you're describing your experience of those early courses that you did with the occupational therapist, and you're describing learning just about what is depression and what is anxiety, and how that gave you a sense of deeper understanding maybe of yourself and what you were going through, and then to be able to share that with your peer support group, you know, that other people are going through the same thing. And it sounds like that was empowering.
I think that was the most empowering thing for the biggest start of the recovery. It was, I call a breakthrough. For me, that was the breakthrough for my recovery, was the education part and the peer support.
Yeah, that's really powerful, isn't it?
Yeah,
lovely. Thank you, Eunice. Would any of you have maybe any examples of different things that you learned maybe on programmes? You know, specific tool or insight that you got on a recovery education course?
Something I have learned quite recently, it's on our courses and I practice it myself, and it's a very simple technique, but it's meditation and relaxation.
Okay.
And I started applying this every day, and this has had a really beneficial effect on me. It really helps with my anxiety. And I find that if I get a little bit stressed out or I feel a bit anxious, I can take my mat out and do my 10-minute relaxation technique and my meditation. And I find that one really stands out for me as being really helpful.
Yeah.
That's great. Thanks, Joanna. What about you, Eunice? Is there anything?
I suppose the meditation now would be, because Ted, another peer educator, delivers that course, and it's very good. And I suppose I've only got in really deep into meditation this last couple of years. I found it very hard at the start.
Yeah.
Very hard to catch on to. Mm. But now I find it very beneficial now. So.
Yeah. So just to be able to slow down and ground through the meditation.
Just to give the brain the switch off.
And
sometimes it can go on a bit of a race or,
sure,
you know, so you just need to just chill down and just take that wee bit of time to yourself. Yeah. And I think that helps an awful lot.
Yeah. And what about you, Lorraine? Any tools that you use?
Yeah, well, we do a course called Hope and Optimism.
Mm.
And in during that course, we talk about like how hope can be lost, or and then how there's some tools and tips on how to regain hope.
Okay.
For me, that was another breakthrough, because I'd always grown up, I was more like pessimistic. Okay. And so I never really had hope. And then I was doing a lot of research on hope and stuff like, you know, like some of the tools that I would use is a situation might come up and I think, is this going to be still an issue in a year? You know, whereabouts in the stage of my life, where does this sit? Do I have to worry about it for a year or a month or a week? It's definitely helped like with my problem solving skills. Also the fact that I can enjoy good moments in my life. Because before, you know, something good would happen and I wouldn't get very excited about it, or I wouldn't enjoy it because I was thinking too much about all the other stresses in my life and thinking, this is good now, so I'm waiting for the drop.
Okay.
You know, so it's helped me to balance things out a bit, really, and to bring hope and to understand things that I can't control, such as COVID. None of us can control COVID. But I can control how I feel about the situation, because it's my mind, and that's helped me enormously.
Yeah, that's really interesting, because I think that's something that can catch us all out, isn't it? Things happen and we can feel as though life is kind of happening to us. But what I'm hearing is that all these tools and things that we can learn through recovery education can empower us to actually choose then how we respond to this life that's happening.
Yeah.
That's where our power lies.
That's
maybe
where our power lies, definitely. And it all takes practice. It's not a once-off thing that you apply at that moment, at that time. This is something that you have to work on with every tool in order for it to become automatic.
Sure. And as I was hearing for you, Eunice, you were talking about the meditation and the relaxation and how, you know, it took you a long time to be able to get into it.
It did.
And now you're in a better place to be able to sit with it. But I think sometimes people are put off by meditation because, oh God, I can't sit and do it, so I'm no good at this, or it's not for me. But there is that kind of thing where you have to kind of stick at it and work.
And sometimes you have to maybe, you know, if it's not working, just park it. And just then maybe when time's right, go back to it again. That's what I done.
Yeah. And use other tools maybe?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I would listen to a lot on YouTube now, different talks. When you get in doing courses and all, there's an awful lot to learn. Yeah. Every day you're learning something new.
Sure.
I would have listened to, you know, to different talks and picking up as much information as I could. And I think it kept the old brain going as well and kept it awake. You know, and distracted me from maybe other things that I didn't want to be thinking about.
Something that's come up in a lot of the podcasts is the idea of silver linings, and that when we look for them, it helps us reframe our adversity. You've all been through a lot of stuff and a lot of challenges and difficult times, but you clearly come through that to a stage where you've got lots of skills that you can use to manage life now and manage any mental health challenges that come your way. But I'm wondering then about sort of silver linings for you, about something that has come out of those adverse times. So, Joanna, what about you?
Yes, absolutely. So, personally for me, I have been hospitalised a number of times. And, you know, I look at that as a bad situation. I look at that as being very unfortunate. But the silver lining, the good thing that has come out of that is that I've made some wonderful friends. I've made some wonderful friends from those hospital admissions, and we're still friends now. They're very important relationships. Mm. We understand each other. We help each other. Mm. It's a massive thing to know someone or some people who have similar experiences, who have similar mental health conditions. It's very special friendships. Mm. So I would see that as a definite silver lining for me.
Yeah. Wow, yeah. Yeah, thanks, Joanna. What about you, ladies? Have you got?
I think I suppose a bit like that for myself. I think I always said that anybody, you know, that people that I've met at the peer support group, whether it be people I've met in clinics or, you know, in courses and everything, I think they're the most honest people you'd ever talk to, and I think that always sticks to me, and it has a big part. It's very, I don't know, I get, I suppose, a bit emotional when I think about it.
Yeah.
Because are very honest and very true people.
I suppose it's heartening, isn't it? When people are honest, it gives us permission to be honest too. And sometimes that honesty has to be with ourselves or something. And what I'm hearing there is openness and honesty of people who are really challenged, like with really difficult circumstances, and yet to be able to say it like it is and to tell their story, or to, that there's a power in that for others.
There is.
What about you, Lorraine? Any silver linings for you?
Valuing myself, definitely. Okay. And I think everybody needs to value themselves. In my opinion, like, nobody on this earth is more important than somebody else, or less important than somebody else. You know, we're all equal. And we can have the power to brighten up someone's day by saying a few kind words or an action that we do. I mean, that is such a positive impact. And then another one, I suppose, is, again, the amount of support and the amount of friendships and connections that I have now as a result. I mean, as Joanna was saying about the contacts that she's made, I think 50% of my contacts are from people that I've met on my journey.
Yeah.
And again, we all still keep in touch, or the odd text. So, yeah, it's great. And it's great to know that if I am having a challenging day or something, I've got my friends.
Mm.
You know, we're not just colleagues, we're friends,
yeah,
that we can rely on each other.
Because it takes courage to, as well, though, doesn't it, to ask for help or to reach out and say, I'm having a bad day,
totally,
doesn't it?
Yeah, totally.
So to know that there's somebody there who's actually going to be able to hold that for you, or acknowledge that for you, because they've been there too and had bad days too.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a real good bond. Never give up on a dream either. Mm. I mean, I was saying that I was always in the financial services industry, and I started working at 16 in an office. And so although I've done different jobs in the financial services, I was always tied to it. And it wouldn't have been my career choice. I just kind of used it as a bridging job, but ended up like 30 years in the industry. But now I'm doing something so completely different, something that I'm so passionate about, working with people that I love. It's possible. So never give up.
Lovely. Thanks, Lorraine. And thank you, Joanna and Eunice too. You've all been so generous with your stories and, you know, your nuggets of wisdom. So thank you so much for sharing that.
Thank you, Miffy.
Yeah, thank you very much for giving us the opportunity.
So, Kevin, can you talk to me a bit about Innovation Recovery, what it is and so on?
Well, look, I'd start by saying it's been a nice time to be here listening to all these voices, because this is the first time after 2 years we've been able to catch up really and track what we've been doing. And it's lovely for me to hear all the peer educators talk about their journey, even in the college, and what we've been trying to do, because their journey from, you know, you can see the level of confidence and the, you know, the passion they bring to this job, which has been fantastic, and they give a lot to it. And it's not just a personal story and their lived experience. There's a lot of skills that have accumulated through hard work and challenges, personal challenges during the year, and also, you know, presenting stuff on Zoom and things like that. That was throwing a lot of stuff thrown up against them. So it's really interesting for me to see that dynamic change that transformation that we talk about in recovery, but this is actually in very, very close to what we're talking about. So it's great. To me, it's more about what the girls will be talking about, that time to reflect and to be aware of what's happening. Because I think, you know, when Eunice alluded to that, that a lot of times people get overwhelmed by, they don't understand what's happening to them. Allowing people time to reflect, modelling, you know, their experience and saying, look, you've been there, but you can come through it because I've been there. And, you know, these are small wee tips and sort of support and advice. But really, it is that idea that you work in a collaboration with somebody. And that's the thing. It's an adult education. We're very much in the education space. We're not in the therapy. We're not competing with anybody. We've got our own space where we try new ideas and a different approach to mental health. Because we talk about that all the time, but, you know, and paradoxically, I think the COVID crisis, in a sense, if anything, you're talking about silver linings, mm-hmm. it's allowed maybe to accentuate that trying new things, like Zoom, trying new approaches to mental health, you know, where we get peer support who come from that passion, lived experience, and genuine, authentic voice. This isn't artificial, you know what I mean? This is not somebody giving a TED talk about whatever, but it is that authentic voice, which I love. And you can, there's a certain honesty that Eunice talks about, which I love. And also that vulnerability comes with it, because, you know, you are exposing yourself a wee bit. But you're combining that with a wee bit, you're working and co-designing these projects with healthcare professionals. So you're trying to put this package together that is attractive, and you invite people into these courses, and hopefully they get something out of it. That's the really exciting thing that I find about this. When people understand their own emotions and things that affect them, you know, we don't fully understand everything about ourselves, but if we give ourselves pause to reflect and give ourselves time to prepare for things, possibly sometimes, you know, like we maybe prepare for Christmas. It's going to be a difficult time maybe. But if we name it what it is, you know, as you said before, sometimes if you're having a bad day, oh, I'm having a rotten day, like, you know, and get it out there. And that allows you time to maybe prepare for it and share with others. To me, these programs we do are interesting and made a mark on other people's lives, which is great. And hopefully we're creating that maybe community of people. That's my ideal, that we have create a supportive community that feed into that and also try to support each other. So it is an interesting project.
Yeah. And can you give me a little bit of background then into the innovation recovery itself?
This was really a cross-border project. We cover certain areas along the border counties to support people living in the border counties, which is traditionally known to be deprived areas, socially, economic and otherwise, and higher rates of mortality, morbidity and mental health issues along the border areas. So the counties we cover, we've got six peer educators in Sligo, Cavan, Monaghan, Leitrim and Fermanagh. So we're a cross-border. It's funded by EU funding through COT and the HSC. The nature of our programmes, the characteristics, I would say, are trying to make them accessible. There's no waiting list. The language around it is very much layperson's language. It's not, we try to demedicalise stuff. And we talk about, rather than diagnosis and medication or things like that, even depression, and say, we tend to talk about big emotions. You know, mental health is about diagnosis and treatments, and ours is a slightly different approach. We're supporting people in border counties, and, you know, there is a part of the project to set up an online course that I'll give you some more information on that, which we've done. We've designed about 14 programs online so people can access those 24 hours, you know, 365 days a year, which is great.
Yeah.
So there's none of those barriers about getting information.
Yeah.
And hopefully that will create an online community. We also do group work when we're allowed to do, which is lovely.
Yeah.
We've done some stuff with schools, transition your students, which has been lovely. Mm. I came from a background of in epidemiology years ago, which looks at sort of, we all know about epidemiology now, pandemics, whatever. Mm. But one of the things about epidemiology, it looks at preventative things, how you put things in place at an early stage so illnesses don't escalate. Mm. So my interest has always been in mental health, coming full circle, is what resources or what ideas or what programs can we put in at an early stage intervention to prevent people from getting stuck, you know, serious mental health issues.
Yeah.
Some of the programs we've done with Transition Your Students has definitely sold me that idea that more information needs to be given even at an earlier stage.
Can you tell me a little bit about what sort of content you're talking about with those early interventions with programs for Transition Year students, for example?
Yeah, well, for starters, when we co-design them with or co-produce them with the teachers, for starters. So we sit down with the teachers. What do these guys want? because we don't want to come with a pre-prepared package. And one of the things we came across is they didn't want anything too heavy or depressing. They wanted something that's motivating and stimulating for young people. And it also gives them an understanding of some of the stress, the challenges, without over-medicalizing it. So we would talk about big emotions rather than anxiety, for example, because I think that's overused, some of those terms. And then they get a basic understanding where anxiety comes, like what Eunice was talking about. But also a big part of that is empowering them to recognize that they've got a lot of resources within themselves or their wider family or communities or supporters, wherever they use. And that's quite an interesting breakthrough, as Eunice said, because a lot of times people think I've got a bit of anxiety, I'm, you know, feeling really low, I need to go to the doctor and then healthcare profession. Whereas maybe we need to pause and say, look at it, you know, can we deal with this ourselves? Is there resources we can deal with? So that's been an interesting insight. And that self-care, that idea, looking after your sleep, looking after your diet, the physical side of things, but also looking after practical things like breathing exercise to prevent things escalating. It is a combination of the physical side of things and the mental. Instead of divorcing those two, I think what we've happened in mental health is we've talked a top-down approach. We've said, oh, you need counselling, or you need CBT, or we need those things. But we also need insight. We need reflection. But we also need to get out there and walk in nature. Or we need, you know, to relax. We need to breathe, you know, to do yoga or whatever, you know, as a mindfulness, Eunice was saying too. We need to normalise this stuff, you know, really at a very basic level. These are things, these are challenges that are going to affect us throughout our life. Anybody that's had bereavement, anybody that's had failure, anybody that's had, you know, rejection or disappointment, they are the big challenges that we're going to... And so we might as well try and prepare ourselves or get our heads around them at some stage. And there's small wee tips and support you get. These are tried and tested by people that have been there, not just from an academic.
And what I'm hearing in that then is that these recovery education programs that you're offering are holistic in their approach then. So what you're delivering is not just about, you know, how to look after your mental health. You're talking about how, you know, eating healthily, getting exercise, getting out in nature, all of those things that all fit together as part of the holistic approach. And so, you know, you use the term about the medical model there, that this is breaking that down and where there's a place, obviously, for medicine and for that clinical intervention. But recovery is actually much more about lots of other things, and the recovery education and learning about yourself. And you're talking about big emotions, which we all experience, don't we?
Yeah.
And that all these traumas and adversities that we face are also normal. You know, that everybody faces challenges. Yeah. And you talk about the border counties where there's been so much trauma over the years and the generations. And so I'm actually feeling very hopeful, even just having this conversation, you know, around the potential for recovery education as it takes hold. It's part of the national policy to make recovery education part of mental health services across the board. So to hear you talking about this in this very positive way is very heartening.
And I do think the fact that we're in that education space, and I think we need to stay in that, because it gives us the freedom to respond in a relevant way to the needs of the communities, which are changing in the last couple of years, or, you know, so, you know, and be more responsive to their needs and to reach out to them where they are, rather than, you know, those, you know, they have to be referred in or whatever, or barriers, and, you know, so we're trying to always look at that those ways, and that's probably why the e-learning is important, so people can log on at any time.
Can I ask you then, how do people enroll on these programs?
All people have to do is really ring up our office. You know, there's things like Men's Health, Mindfulness Hour, a wellness toolbox, things, navigating the mental health services, 5 ways to wellness.
Brilliant. So I'll be sharing some of the information at the end of where people can get in touch, and that 24-hour portal. Absolutely. As well. Joanna, were you involved with an art program?
We run a lovely course called Art for Mental Health, which is also called Easel Way to Recovery. And this is a really fun class. We use the recovery principles model CHIME, and we pick a theme each week. So for example, 1 week we might use the theme of hope as a guide, and then we paint about hope. When we've all the painting done, we have a little discussion, and then we do some writing about our paintings. Then at the end of the session, we present our paintings and our writing to the rest of the group. And then when all those classes were combined together, we did an art for mental health exhibition in the local library, where we could showcase everyone's work from the art for mental health course.
What I'm hearing in there is then that you're using the medium of creativity to access kind of more understanding about the self through the CHIME model, and using that as a way of understanding the self better and building confidence and so on. It sounds fantastic. Yeah, lovely.
So there we leave the conversation. The CHIME model that Joanna mentioned in relation to the art course is a model that supports all recovery principles. CHIME stands for connectedness, hope, identity, meaning, and empowerment. By having a balance of these five key pillars in our lives, we can support our recovery and maintain our well-being on a daily basis. Lorraine also spoke about RAP, which stands for Wellness Recovery Action Plan, and is a course you can do. Episode 2 of the Stories of Recovery series is dedicated to RAP, so if you're interested, do have a listen to that. If you'd like to find out more about the Innovation Recovery College, please email innovation.recoverysouth@hse.ie or phone 087 409 8630 to enrol on a course. The college published their prospectus for each term on their social media platforms, which you can find by searching Innovation Recovery. You can also access the self-directed learning modules on mental health recovery by registering on www.mymentalhealthrecovery.com. All the modules and courses are free of charge and available to everyone interested in learning more about their mental health and well-being. If you'd like to avail of support or information on services for yourself or someone you know, you can visit the HSE website www.yourmentalhealth.ie for general information as well as how and where to get support. You should always contact your GP, doctor or other health professional you might be in contact with if you have concerns about your mental health and well-being. In the event of an emergency, call 999 emergency services if you or someone you know is at risk of harming themselves. For further resources and information on recovery and promoting mental health and well-being, please visit www.mentalhealthireland.ie/resources, where there are a wide variety of downloadable resources, webinar recordings, videos and links that are informative and supportive, including family recovery, farming and mental health, recovery colleges and more. Thanks for listening to this episode of Stories of Recovery, and bye for now.